Galatians 4, 45 to 45. And chapter 3, I'm going to read verses 1 through 5. O foolish Galatians, who hath bewitched you that ye should not obey the truth, before whose eyes Jesus Christ hath been evidently set forth, crucified among you? This only would I learn of you: received ye the Spirit by the works of the law, or by the hearing of faith? Are ye so foolish, having begun in the Spirit, are ye now made perfect by the flesh? Have ye suffered so many things in vain, if it be yet in vain? He therefore that ministereth to you the Spirit, and worketh miracles among you, doeth he it by the works of the law, or by the hearing of faith? Now, we have been talking for the last few weeks about the foolishness, what that was, and the bewitching. And that verse 5, we're going to look in verse 4 and 5 a lot more in depth at those two verses. But he's not changing gears here. You have to keep it in context of everything that he's been saying so far. That worketh miracles. I know what we do with that, and yes, I believe in healings and all those things, but that's not what he's talking about right here. And I hope to show that as we go. But, you know, he's asking these Galatians, and this is the result when we have an ego-centric view of salvation, a me-centered view of salvation. I mean, here's one telltale sign. When there's a me-centered view of salvation, there always seems to be a lack. That's why, I mean, and if you think about what I'm telling you, that's why all the preachers can say God's about to move. Because obviously you're in a position of lack, so God's about to move to fix the lack. So your view of salvation then is based on your view of you, and you see the lack, and something needs to be done about the lack that you're seeing. Right? So that I mean, that just tells you that you're not seeing you're seeing the wrong man of salvation. You're seeing the wrong one. You're seeing something that you think still needs to be perfected. Something still needs to occur. And why is that? Because you're looking at the wrong man. So the need, and this is something I hope that just this little session today will bring some clarity to a whole lot of things. But the need is not trying to fix me. It's the need is our turning our hearts, submitting unto God, that He may do in our hearts what we can't do. And that's the whole context here that Paul is. I mean, remember, how does Paul live unto God? By not living unto God. I'm crucified. That's how I live unto God. According to the law, through the law, I'm dead to the law. I mean, that's the whole context, that God would do in us what the Judaizers are promising the Galatians by the works of the law. And I myself have been corrected many times by the Lord by not seeing the importance of His Spirit working in me. So we think that's just a small thing. We got, you know, it's always a lot better if you go and do something. I mean, the Lord knows the need of the soul. He corrects and reveals the perfect man. And in that revealing, I don't bring perfection to it. I don't bring perfection to it. It's me seeing the perfect one. And by me seeing the perfect one, you know, like we talked about Sunday, you know, heaven and earth, the otherness. It's me seeing the other man. And not bringing it too close. And what I mean, remember Joshua sent the ark out. Remember we had talked about that. Don't bring it in too close. Keep it out there. Other than. Because sometimes we bring things of the Spirit too close. We bring them too close to define it. We lose our way. And the Lord never leads us into familiar territory. Never. You've not been this way before. I mean, that's... I'm going to tell you what, and I mean, and that is so true. Just reading the scriptures, you may have read that verse so many times. But you go back again, it's brand new. And it's supposed to be that way. Because if you approach that verse with the familiarity, even of what God revealed to you the last time you read that verse, it's still stale bread. It's still old. I mean, it has to be fresh. And when I'm saying this, let me say it this way. He will never bring you into the center of the picture and make you the focus of his work. He will never do that. He just sets the ark out and says, you can't know this. Follow the ark. You can't know this reality unless I guide you, unless the Spirit guides you in all truth. And this is the thing that I want us to understand. You know, in Corinthians, from we're changed into that same image, or you know, changed from glory to glory, and then we got the verse from faith to faith, and you know, the change in a twinkling of an eye, and always, we always think the change is something that's going to happen to me. What the change is the change of my view. Because see, in all other views of salvation, it's me. A change is going to happen to me. God's going to change me. God's going to fix me. And what Paul is saying is your view has to change. You have to go from this to that. And what God does is He brings you and shows you the perfect one. Because the perfection that we seek, we won't find it in ourselves, but we find it in Him who dwells in us. And see, we always look to measure perfection or even judge others by, well, he said he's holy, he said he's righteous, he, you know, all this other. And you'll never find it there in any of those things. So if we don't see perfection or righteousness or whatever other term in Him, we fool ourselves into believing that one day we'll see the proof of perfection in me. So that's why it always has to be God fixing me. You know, so many times, well, brother, I'm a work in progress. God's, you know, I'm not perfect. God's still working on me. No, that's a lie. He already worked on you. I'm crucified with Christ. Now He has everything that He desired in His Son. And grace has brought us in that we could partake of everything that He is. See, I think about those things sometimes, and I know people could get the impression, well, gosh, He, all He's wanting to do is get rid of us. My gosh, the love of God is He gave. And think of the grace, the cross has brought us in that we can partake of all that He is. I mean, if we just get our love, see, we're waiting on Him to do something, to fix something, or, you know, to do whatever. He's like, just come over here and partake of this, drink of this water, eat at this table. Live in these houses I've already built. I mean, not, hey, guys, we got to fix something, do something. Just, you know, I brought you, you know, in the house you didn't build, vineyards you didn't plant, into a land that you had nothing. I brought you here that you could live free, live. And, you know, we begin in the Spirit, and then we think we're going to find perfection in the flesh. We look at the flesh and we see something that's lacking. And why? Because it's based on self-assessment. That's why, you remember the picture I drew Sunday? That's why He said, set your affection not on things on the earth. I could say it this way, set your affection not on me, but on things above. Why not on things on the earth? What is the first man? He's of the earth, earthy. That's you and me of ourselves without Christ. So why set your affection on things on the earth? Do not set your affection on you. Do not look for proof in you. Set your affections on things above when Christ, who is our life, shall appear. Because that ego is the source of all deception. The father of all lies. I just let something out of the bag there. And that's the way salvation is viewed, from the viewpoint of I, from the viewpoint of ego. So salvation is either God has to move and fix something, or it's something we'll get another day. Still yet, I'm right slap dab in the middle of it. And by that case, I'm not partaking of the salvation that He has already given. In fullness, nothing lacking. We use that ego, that false self, to define reality. And there's no truth in it. There's no life in it. That reality must be found in Him. It must be found in His face. That's why Paul said, who lives unto God? Not I. I'm crucified. Christ liveth unto God. The false self, the ego, is crucified. I mean, Paul himself, you know, Paul, the natural man, wasn't crucified, but yet he said he was crucified. He wasn't talking about his flesh and bone body, but he's talking about that identity, that false self, that ego, that called himself Saul of Tarsus, was absolutely, totally put away. Everything that Paul had called life was crucified. Nevertheless, I live, yet not I. But now, Paul says, I know who life is, and He lives in me. And see, that's why we're going to, you remember we talked the last time about that little parenthesis. That's why the law was given. Not to make you righteous, but to drive you to a face-to-face encounter with righteousness Himself. That you would see, hey, it's not me. That you would face the judgment of that face-to-face encounter. See, the law had a purpose. It had a reason. You remember why the law was given? Abraham started out walking by faith. He believed God. It was counted unto him to righteousness. But these people refused to walk by faith. Now, so God gave them the law. Then what, I mean, because we got Abraham over here, 430 years before the law was given, they walked by faith. But 430 years later, they would not walk by faith. So the law was given. So, you know, we talked about that, from faith to faith. The faith that was before the law to bring us to the faith that is what? The end of the law. The cross took that parenthesis out of the way. And here's the thing. The gospel is the only thing that brings you from the faith that looks for something to the faith that beholds what Abraham was looking for. It's the gospel bringing you. That's why Paul rebuked them for following another gospel that he said wasn't a gospel. And you, if you follow that other gospel, it will. If you follow that other gospel, which is not a gospel, it will always keep you bound in that parentheses, in that law period. And that period wasn't even a part of the original purpose anyway. Why was the law given? It was added. Why? Because of transgression. What was the transgression? See, our minds go, well, they started sinning. No, the transgression was they wouldn't walk by faith. That's why they didn't enter into the land. What, wasn't mixed with faith? I mean, you go read that in Hebrews 3 and 4. So their transgression was what? Unbelief. What is unbelief? They didn't walk by faith. So see, I mean, haven't we butchered all those things in the Christian world? The transgression that here they was, and then, you know, we, in our minds we think they're going out, going to bars and watching bad movies and all this other stuff. And their transgression was they just didn't walk by faith. So you listen to that other gospel, which is not a gospel, it keeps you bound up in the transgression. You're not walking by faith. But you know, how many times we talk what faith is? Faith is beholding Christ. So if you're not beholding Christ, you're automatically bound up in that that's hoping for something, that's looking for something. So you're automatically bound up. And if you're bound up, now can you see where the scripture comes in? The truth will make you free. And he who the Son makes free is free. The Son makes, we just think that's Jesus coming around. But no, we're set free from that whole realm, brought out of that. Now we're actually beholding something and not bound up into that thing that we didn't walk away. And see, here's one of our troubles. We've come out of this realm of the first, been brought into the kingdom of his dear Son, brought into the new creation, brought into the new man. But I call it a hangover, the carryover. So what we do is we try to bring all of our understanding from over here, bring it in over here. Our understanding, according to us. And so it's not his understanding. So when I try to bring in my understanding from over here, over to here, what am I doing? I am trying to bring the unclean thing, the lie, over here. How many times we read over here, touch not, taste not, handle it, don't bring, you know, ache, and don't even bring the unclean thing. Don't put it in your tent. Don't touch it, you know. So many times, because the unclean thing is not allowed in the boundaries. And even the very touching of it, I mean, how many times they knew if they went out and touched something that was dead, they were defiled. And if they were defiled, they were put outside of the camp. So, yeah, but we want to bring our own understanding, which is the lie, the darkness, over here into the light. And the cross won't allow it. That's, you remember what Paul said in Galatians 1? He said, I say, let them be accursed. See it. See them for who they are. Don't let them bring that into your tent. Let me say it this way. Don't let them bring you back into this picture. You see? Don't let them bring you back into this picture. Let them be accursed. Because if they do, it will cause you to do what Israel did. What did Israel do? Created a God. While Moses is up on the mountain talking to a God that they can't see, they were down here making a God they can see. And the God that they made, that they could see, was according to what? Their own understanding and their own craftiness. And it was a God that they had seen back over in Egypt. One that they were familiar with. See, we do the same thing. We bring in our own familiarity. We bring in our own understanding and say, this is God. We say, this is the God that brought me out of Egypt. Isn't that what they said? They made him a calf. Moses, you're talking to something I can't see. This is the God that brought us out. God said, Moses, you better get down there. Why? These people's corrupted themselves. What's the corruption? They turned aside, made themselves a God. Created a God out of their own understanding. See, if we are not looking at things unseen by faith, we will create a seen reality according to our own understanding. It's just the default position. And the thing that we create will always look like me. Because it's according to my image, according to my view, according to my understanding. It'll be me looking like Jesus. So the result of this carryover, would you say it in one word? Confusion. Babylon. Confusion. That's what Babylon is, isn't it? Confusion. Confusion in judgment, confusion in behavior, confusion everywhere. And if you look at Paul in all of his epistles, you know, Corinthians, Galatians, Colossians, whatever. Paul has some hard things to say to these people. The reason being was because of the carryover. Because there needs to be a clean cut. There needs to be a circumcision, a judgment, a clean cut. This day of our old reproach of Egypt away. I mean, if you remember in Romans 7, just a quick note here, Romans 7. I speak to them that know the law, how that the law hath dominion over man as long as he lives. The woman that has got a husband, she's bound by the law to her husband. But if the husband's dead, she's loose from that husband. You know the scriptures. But in reality, if we look at it, because here's this woman, the soul, she's married to the first. Now think about this just in a normal relationship. Well, let's say that her husband died. Well, now she gets remarried. And while she's remarried, all she wants to do when her relationship is talk about the old.
And not even that, she decides, I'm not going to bury the dead out of my sight. I'm just going to bring this man, set him up at the table too, with his rotten corpse and flesh. And me and my new husband and my old husband will just all sit down and have dinner. Something's got to be buried and put away out of sight. You can't do that and have pictures of your old husband up on the wall. Just ain't going to fly. I mean, I'm just thinking in reality. There has to be a clear cut, severing judgment that the old man dead. Buried with him. Put the dead out of thy sight. Is we're not aware of the new relationship until we try to bring in something of those. Something that the cross has already put away. And when you do that, what does it do to the relationship? Does it not strain the relationship? Absolutely strains the relationship. So whenever you try to bring the ego in, whenever you try to bring the lie in, whenever you try to bring the me into the relationship, instead of us beholding him and thanking God that he has brought us into a participation, that he's made into us all that he is, we try to bring all this junk over here. Looking at me and seeing all the lack. In 1 Corinthians chapter 2, verse 2, Paul said this, I'm determined not to know anything among you save Jesus Christ and him. This is the foundation of which Paul going to build upon for his letter. What? Jesus Christ and him crucified. Why did he say that? Because the Corinthian church had too much carryover. They had all this stuff that they had brought over. So Paul, right out of the gate, knows that there needs to be this severance. I mean, these guys have brought it. You read the Corinthian letter, first and second. My gosh, they were doing all kinds of things. Behavior and everything that was way out of whack. He's talking to a church here. So right out of the gate, Paul says, we've got to get this cross thing settled. I mean, that's first. So we look at this thing and we say, oh, Paul, he's saying flesh and spirit can't work together. So we think, okay, I got it, Paul. Flesh and spirit are enmity. They can't work together. So we start to see it. But guys, I want to tell you what, the confusion is deeper than that. The confusion is that we still think there's two things. We still think there's flesh and spirit. You know, like we're going to tell somebody and say, well, you need to, you need to come to the cross and die. You know, I've said this stuff. It's not true. Already dead. Christ is your life or you have no life. So there's not two things. You remember what Paul says here in 2 Corinthians 3? We went over this verse a while back. For if that which is done away was glory. So something here is done away. The first, all of the first is what? Done away. Much more that which remaineth is glorious. So what we have here is one is done away and one remains. In Paul's heart, a circumcision had taken place. In Paul's heart, one was gone. All of the first was gone. Paul didn't have two choices. You see the Galatians, or you start in the spirit, or you wait for it in the flesh. They still got two choices here. Paul is like, what? How foolish? There's not two choices. There's not even a flesh for you to choose from. It's gone. Nailed it to the cross. Took it out of the way. Only one remains here, you foolish Galatians. Can you see now why he would think, what in the world? Somebody must have put a spell on you trying to bring something back up that has been dead and put away. In Paul's heart, just like in John, Paul had come to the place where he had saw the Lord and heard the Lord say, I'm he that liveth and was dead, and behold, I'm alive forevermore. I'm it. The confusion arises in our hearts when I believe there's two things and there's none. You know what confusion means? Confusion. Fusion means to take, two things and mingle them together. Try to fuse something, two things together. So if one thing is removed, what do you do with confusion? It is no more. And so, does the scriptures not say that God is not the author of confusion? God hasn't taken flesh and spirit and tried to mingle them together. Do you see that scripture? He has not taken two things and tried to mingle them together. What is God? God is the author and finisher of faith. And what does faith do? Faith beholds the one. Faith has no room for confusion because faith beholds one reality. One reality defined and measured and proven and evidenced where? In the face of Jesus Christ. Look at this verse right here, 2 Corinthians 11 and 3. Here's Paul in his Corinthian letters again because of their carryover. But I fear, lest by any means, as the serpent beguiled Eve through his subtlety, so your mind should be corrupted from, taken from. You're already there in the oneness of Christ, but, from means to be pulled back out of that, from the simplicity, oneness that is in Christ, where you have already been brought. How's your mind corrupted? To be brought from the one, when it allows another object to come in view. Remember, it's like Daniel. What happened in Daniel? The stone that came out of the mountain, not made with men's hand, did what to the earth? Or did what to the mountain? Filled part of it, bind it over in the corner, filled half of it, filled three quarters of it. Filled the whole earth. So there was not a space for anything else. That must take place in our souls. That stone must fill the whole earth, which is your soul. Where there's no place found for anything else. That's in Revelation. We went over this verse one time. I'll just hit it again here real quick. Revelation 20 and 11. I saw a great white throne. There's the judgment. There's the severed. And him that sat on it, from whose face the earth and heaven fled away, and there was no place for them. No place for anything of the first. No place for anything of the old. First man of the earth, earthy. The first man is crucified. No place for him anymore. That's the simplicity. And simplicity, guys, does not mean simple. It does not mean God is simple-minded. It means it's a singleness. It's Christ. My God, if it was simple, anybody could pick this up and just get it by your own understanding. That's not what he's talking about. But he alone defines everything. Simplicity. Let's go look at those verses in Exodus that we were talking about, the golden calf. Exodus 32:7, they rose up early on the morrow,
offered burnt offerings and brought peace offerings. The people sat down to eat and drink, rose up to play. The Lord said to Moses, "Go, get thee down, for thy people, which thou broughtest out of the land of Egypt, have corrupted themselves. They've turned aside quickly out of the way which I commanded them." Think about this. They turned aside slow, quickly. "The way which I commanded, they made them a molten calf and worshipped it, and have sacrificed thereunto, and said, 'These be thy gods, O Israel, which brought thee up out of the land of Egypt.'" Look at Deuteronomy 4. Verse 15 through 20. We looked at these verses before. "The Lord, take ye therefore good heed unto yourselves, for ye saw no manner of similitude on the day the Lord spake to you in war about in the midst of the fire. Lest ye what? Corrupt yourselves, and make you a graven image, the similitude of any figure, the likeness of male or female, of any beast that is on the earth, any fish that is in the waters beneath the earth. At least thou lift up thine eyes into heaven, and when thou seest the sun, the moon, the stars, and the host of heaven, should be driven to worship them and serve them, which the Lord thy God hath divided into all nations under the whole heaven. But the Lord hath taken you and brought you forth out of the iron furnace, even out of Egypt. Why? To be unto him a people of inheritance, as ye are this day." As ye are this day. Don't worship those things you can see. It's just Christ revealed in your soul and your heart submitted to him, allowing him to bring me where I can never go. Or even imagine. What do you mean, him bringing me to a place I can even imagine? Because we think, man, I can imagine a whole lot. You cannot. What do you mean you cannot? You cannot imagine one thing outside of yourself that doesn't have you in the picture. You can. Try. Well, I've imagined going to the moon. I imagine where you're always in the picture. So you cannot imagine something that doesn't have you as the center of the picture. It's just the natural mind. It's the boundaries of the natural mind. You can't go, your imagination can't go beyond you. But he is above and beyond that. And only the Spirit of God can take you beyond you. That's my point. Only the Spirit can take you beyond you. I mean, it's not look at me if you want to see Jesus. I mean, even Christ himself, Jesus of Nazareth, had to be revealed because all he was to them was the son of Joseph, the carpenter's son. It took God to reveal him. He said, "Flesh and blood have not revealed this unto us." So we can't ever come up to the delusion, if you want to see Jesus, look at me or look at the church. No. He must be revealed in the heart. The church was there, but he was in the midst. And he must be revealed. So, Paul asked these Galatians, "Okay, Galatians, did you receive the Spirit because you did good things? Or because you heard the gospel and opened your heart to receive? That you heard faith. You heard he has come." And let me back here in Galatians. I mean, what is it? The same Spirit that comes in the beginning, you know, we went over this, is the same Spirit that works in you to do what? Bring you to perfection. But now listen, we could look at that verse and say, see, he's bringing us to perfection. That means he's perfecting me. No, no, no. Because that's what they were thinking. You see what I mean? Because they said, okay, he's going to bring us to perfection. Okay, there's a man who is called perfect. We think it's me. God's got to fix me. No, he's bringing you to the perfect one. So we have this confusion. I mean, perfection is, so what's the remedy for confusion? If I'm out of the way, the confusion is gone. Right? The simplicity of Christ, it's the single object of God's view being revealed in me. And unless we allow the Spirit of God to reveal Christ in us, you will think something is lacking, something is missing, something has fallen short. So the deficiency is not in Christ. The deficiency then is in my understanding. That's why he goes back in 1 Corinthians and says, I determined to know nothing among you save Jesus Christ and him crucified. What is it? That's in chapter 2. What does he say just a few verses after that? I have not seen, ear hath not heard, nor is it entered into the heart of man. I'm going to start with the cross, and then I'm going to tell you, I have not seen, ear hath not heard, neither entered into the heart of man these things, but that is why God has what? Given you the Spirit. Isn't that what he said? We've not received the Spirit of this, but God has given us the Spirit that we might know what? The deep things of God. The things that are freely given us. I mean, he says that the natural mind can't even know this. This ground that we've been brought into, this kingdom, Christ, which grace has brought us, you have no natural faculties to know it. Nothing here is familiar to you. Nothing here has anything to do with you. If you are to know it, God must reveal it. That's why he's given you the Spirit. To know what he's freely given. If not, what will we do? We'll corrupt it. See, we are arrogant enough in our natural minds to think we can figure it out. But we can't. See, that's why a true cut needs to be made. A true division, clarity, not confusion. Clarity. See what grace has made us partakers of. Faith accesses grace. Faith beholding Christ. Galatians, you are being bewitched into receiving a form of godliness, but denying the power thereof. We do the same thing, not to law, but when I say, I mean, because you go in any church today, just about anywhere in the world, Christian community, they're not preaching the Ten Commandments anymore, but they still have their own laws according to their own understanding. When we grew up, we were preaching grace, but outward obedience. What I mean outward obedience? You don't go to church on Sunday, look out. You don't do this, look out. You don't dress right, look out. So we're preaching obedience, but it's all on the outward side. Now, there was an outward obedience, but where was it found? It was found in the types and shadows under the law. Now, there's an inward obedience of the heart, a turning, a submitting unto what? Christ's obedience, which he became what? Obedient unto death, even the death of the cross. So we find out in reality it was never my obedience, but it always pointed to his. So see, that's where the confusion comes in. As long as there's that, where are you at? You're still bound up in the parentheses called the law in transgression because you're not what? Walking by faith. And the God that we made, got to throw this part in there, the God that we made was according to what? Our own craftiness, our own understanding. Well, I believe this is what obedience is, brothers and sisters. If y'all don't go to church now, how in the world can you go to heaven if you don't go to church? You know, like we talked about Sunday, men love the darkness. Why? Because I can justify myself in the darkness. I can justify myself in the darkness and condemn you. But see, when light comes, it exposes all of us as being not him. It's like John the Baptist says, I'm not him. That's him. He that's after me is preferred before me. And that's what the light does. It exposes us for who we are. Exposes him for who he is. The living one. Because, see, we make a God according to our own understanding out from the realm into which God brought. That's exactly what they did. They made a God and says, this is the God that delivered us out from Egypt. All the seven steps you got to do to receive your salvation. Right? Six things that I did. Seven, even better. And all those outward things have validity until when? Until he appears. And then there seem to be no more relevant. So man himself is an intrusion into spiritual reality, into what is perfect. See, we don't know what spiritual growth is because we try to define spiritual growth by some outward thing. Oh, he prays more. He goes to church more. Oh, he quit drinking. He did this. He quit smoking. We call it spiritual growth. Spiritual growth is an ever deepening inward acknowledgement of the simplicity of Christ, of the simplicity of salvation. That continual bringing into the soul the one life that defines all things. See, we think spiritual growth is what our sight getting bigger. That's not spiritual growth. Broad is the way. Spiritual growth is your sight is brought to focus narrow on one. The simplicity of Christ. See, it's just the opposite, isn't it? Just the opposite of everything that we would look at naturally. Oh, he's got 20/20. He's got the simplicity of Christ. See, that's false understanding. That's confusion. Here, look what Paul says in verse 4. I mean, back in Galatians. They're false understanding. Have you suffered so many things in vain, if it be yet in vain? I mean, guys, your false understanding, if this is your view, have you suffered so many things in vain? If this self-defined, self-measured salvation is your view, you suffered for no reason at all. You've been persecuted for no reason. You've been put in danger for no reason. You've suffered the loss of all things for no reason. Why? Because all you've come away with is just another concept of God that's still defined by you at the center. And I know, guys, and this is the thing that always... This is what it looks like. Because you know, I mean, just like yourselves, you know people that have left their family, they've left friends, and they've left ministries, and they've left all these things to know truth. Paul said, if you suffered all of that, you suffered the loss of all things, and still your view of salvation is you see lack, what have you gained? So you suffered in vain. Do you see what I'm talking about? You suffered the loss. You left the church. You left the church of your upbringing. You've separated from all. Your family has departed from you. And yet your view of salvation still is lacking. It's still off for another time. I mean, what's the point? If your view of salvation is still you, the center of it. I mean, Paul said you still haven't faced the judgment and the clarity that comes in his appearing in life. Your view of salvation has you in the picture and sees lack. You suffered in vain. What did Paul say in Philippians? Paul said, I've counted all things lost. No, but not in vain, but for the excellency of the knowledge of Christ Jesus my Lord, for whom I have suffered the loss of all things, do count them but dung, that I may win Christ. He said, God, you don't even have Christ. All you see is lack. You suffered all the loss of everything, and all you see is the lack. See what some strong words Paul is telling the Galatians here. See, when it pleased God to reveal His Son in Paul, Paul didn't just get another concept. A judgment took place in Paul's heart. He counted it done. It wasn't in vain. Paul saw the only thing that remains here is Christ. He suffered the loss in view of the reality. See, you can reject false doctrines and false teachings and lies and hypocrisy and still not be apprehending truth. So what is the need here that Paul is talking about? It's the coming of faith. That's what we're looking at here in Galatians 3. They were under the law till when? Faith come. The need is the coming of faith. Faith has its view fixed on something. And that the coming of faith is the same thing as saying the judgment of the Lord in our hearts, which divides the first from the second. The circumcision. This day I brought the reproach of the Egypt off of you. Faith lays holds of the grace. Faith is what is the anchor of our soul anchored behind the veil. It's faith. Now, he says right here in verse 5, he therefore that ministereth to you the Spirit and worketh miracles among you, doeth it by the works of the law or by the hearing of faith. I just got to show you a little bit of this verse. He therefore that ministereth to you the Spirit. See, we grew up thinking God only gave you a little bit of the Spirit, a measure. You know, you might have had 2 drops full and you might have had 4. What this verse is saying is that you have been fully supplied with the Spirit. Fully supplied with the Spirit. Having, in other words, I can say it this way. Having the Spirit of God, you are fully supplied, lacking nothing. And worketh miracles among you. That word worketh there means effective, effectual. And the word miracles right there is not miracles like healings and walking on water and all that stuff. That word is dunamis. You guys know what dunamis is. It's power. Effectual. What he says, because you've been fully supplied in the Spirit, it's effectual power, and the word among is the word in. It's the, I say 17:22. It's in. Power in you. He that worketh effectually, he has supplied you his spirit. By that same spirit, he works effectually in you by his power. Does he work in you because you obey laws? Or because you're hearing faith? How does God work in you? My God, we want it to be by laws. And I know, guys, I know people right now this day think, I've got something big that's coming up. I better go to church this week so that I can get in the good favors of God. See, we want it by the works of the law. That's what Paul is saying. I better start being good to God so that I can get his blessing. We want it by... That's what Paul is. My God, you heard it by the hearing of faith. Now are you going to go back over here? By the hearing of faith, by the hearing of faith, by the beholding of Christ, by your soul being unveiled, that you might submit your heart and allow the Spirit of God to not only convince you perfectly and fully, how? By his might and power. Work his salvation in you. The same way you began is the same way you continue. How? Being fully supplied by his Spirit, and that same fully supplied Spirit working in you mightily. Never becomes a work of the flesh. It never becomes something you can perform. I'll show you a couple other verses, the same thing. Colossians 1 and 29. Whereunto I also labor, striving according to his working, which worketh in me mightily. Let me read that again. Whereunto I also labor, striving according to his working, which worketh in me mightily. Now, what is this working? Paul had just said the mystery which was hidden from the ages, which is now made manifest to the saints, which is Christ in you, the glory accepted. He works according to that, according to the unveiling of the mystery. And that power works mightily in me and in you. That power. Almost finished. Ephesians 3:20. Now unto him that is able to do exceeding abundantly above all that we ask or think, how? According to the power that worketh in us. The power that works in our soul. What's it doing in our soul? It's transforming our soul. From what? From trying to keep a law to him who is the fulfillment of the law. It works that in. It's transforming us, bringing us from this view of lack into this view of perfection, transforming us from this image of the first to the image of the second, working in us mightily. Remember he said, not by might, not by power, but how? By my Spirit, saith the Lord. Now he's working in us. What's he working in reference to? Just back up a few verses. That he would grant you according to the riches of what? His glory. We just read that in Colossians. Where's his glory at? The glory accepted of God is Christ in you. According to that same glory, to be strengthened with might, power, how? By his Spirit we're at in the inner man. Why? That Christ may dwell in your hearts, that the stone may fill your whole heart, that you be rooted and grounded, whereat? In love. Who is love? That you be rooted and grounded in Christ, that you may be able to comprehend with all the saints, what is the breadth, the length, the depth, the height? Walk out this land, Joshua. Everywhere the soul, you know, Abraham looked to the north, the south, the east, the west. All that I've given to you. And to know the love of Christ, which is common and easy to figure out, which passeth knowledge. Why? That you might be filled with all the fullness of God. The stone fills the whole earth. Got a couple more. Romans 16:25. Now to him that is of power to establish you, how? According to my gospel and the preaching of Jesus Christ, according to the revelation of the mystery which was kept secret since the world began. God has the power to establish your heart. According to what? According to the preaching of the gospel. Not a false gospel that brings you back into view, but a gospel that declares Christ all. Declares Christ as the end of the law for righteousness. A gospel that declares everything that Abraham looked for. Philippians 1 and 6. Being confident of this very thing, that he which hath begun a good work in you will perform it until the day of Jesus Christ. Begun. I mean, all these things are the same verse he said in Galatians. Begun in the Spirit. Isn't that what he asked the Galatians? Did you not begin in the Spirit? This is one thing I would know. Are you begun in the Spirit? Now Paul, in Philippians, confident of this very thing, that he which hath begun a good work in you, having brought you to begin in the Spirit, having brought you to the Alpha, that he which hath begun a good work in you will perform it. Now, who began the good work? Says he did. Who's going to perform it? Same one that started it, same one that finishes it. Now that word perform right there is the same word in Galatians as perfect. You that begun in the flesh or begun in the Spirit, are you now made perfect? It's the same word. Are you now made perfect in the flesh? Are you going to do this? Can you perfect reality? But he says, he that began a good work will perform it until when? Till the day of Jesus Christ. What does that mean? Until the day star. Till the day dawn. And the day star. What? Arise in your heart. What he's talking about here will perform it. What he means is he will bring, he that begun it will bring you to the goal. Remember Paul or Peter? The end of faith, even the salvation of your soul. Faith, he began, you started off in faith. He will surely bring you to its goal. What is its goal? Christ. He will bring you to a face-to-face encounter to the one that it was all spoken of and aimed at from the beginning. So faith, not I, but Christ. Faith is, again, that wall that allows no mixture. So